No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
Hello and welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornBySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. On the other side, John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello, Alan.
How are you?
I'm good. A little sick, but I'm hanging in there.
You know what? Something's got to be going around. I don't know.
Oh, I know what I have. My wife had this last week, so it's just my turn.
The kissy face sickness.
Yes, let's go with that.
And yes, we start off the podcast with a little kissy face, and we're good. All right. So we got a few things going on this week. I mean, every time we think we have nothing to talk about in this somewhat, okay, no somewhat about it, completely dead off season, we have something that happens, and all of a sudden we're ready to talk about it. And of course, no bigger news than Dante Exum.
Yeah, this is super depressing news. Jazz are going to do their own evaluation tomorrow, also known as today for those who are listening to it. And they want to confirm what they said out in Slovenia, which is that it's an ACL tear in his left knee. So if that's truly what it is, then we are likely not to see Dante Exum play at all next season. And that's really sad because he was the real mystery, the real question mark is he going to have this jump in year two? And now we're not going to get to see that.
Yeah. It's you know, it's been interesting to read the focus of folks regarding the news as well. I mean, you have a lot of people you've got the camp that's concerned about Dante's health. You have the camp that's concerned about the development of the Utah Jazz. And it's, where do you sit on this, John? As far as, I mean, this is unfortunate. It's really unfortunate for a 19, 20-year-old kid who is just getting his career going, lots of promise. You know, last year, saw the starting lineup midway through the season. You know, I wouldn't call him a major contributor because he wasn't like he wasn't a major contributor, but he was a contributor, and now this year there's expectations that he's going to be a major contributor, and then this happens. So first off, I'm just going to speak on behalf of the show here. This is terrible news for Dante as a whole. I feel bad for the kid with so much promise ahead of him.
Yeah, this is just bad for the class of 2014. I mean, just about all of them but Andrew Wiggins just had this rotten luck. You had Jabari Parker go out for the year last year. Joel Embiid has yet to play. Aaron Gordon lost most of his season. Marcus Smart missed, I think, like 12 or 14 games. Julius Randle missed the season. Elfrid Payton was in and out. And now Dante Exum looks like he's going to miss his sophomore year. So the highly talented, touted class of 2014, most of those guys, you know, we just have to sit around and wait for them to be healthy to really show us what they can do.
Well, and this morning, I don't know how much you caught this morning. Locked On Sports, Locke did his podcast this morning. It was only 14 minutes. It was quick. He was on his way out the door, but he talked about the alarming and disturbing trend of injuries in the NBA. And he went as far as to suggest, and maybe this is fits the mold more for a Dante Exum than anything, but spoke of the year round effects that this is having on players. And what I mean by year round is year round basketball. Now, this isn't about November, October to June anymore. This is, you know, summer FIBA play. This is the Olympic play. This is summer league play. There's so many things going on now that players are putting themselves out for, and they're getting hurt midway through the summer. And it's, you know, they're putting in, you know, 50, 50 out of the 52 weeks a year of basketball, and it's taking its toll. And that was Locke's take this morning, and I, in some ways, I agree with it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's something to that. Guys are playing more year-round than they used to back in the day. Guys are also coming in younger. It's a lot of these young guys who are getting injured. And maybe the fact that NBA rookies aren't all 22 anymore, maybe their bodies just aren't ready for that physical, you know, rigorous perennial pounding. This is also another one of those things that Mark Cuban's been railing against for years, where he just does not want players under contract with him to go out and go play in FIBA tournaments and do all this extra gameplay because it's his investment, and his investment is at risk.
Especially,
you know, playing for other teams.
Especially when you're talking about guaranteed contracts in a league that is one of the only leagues. In fact, I think it's the only league that offers guaranteed contracts in such a manner. And I don't know about you, but I almost agree with Mark Cuban. You almost have to put limitations on these guys, which is why I know that they don't allow them to do a lot of physical strenuous activity. I seem to remember a comment years back. They don't let players ski because that puts a strain on the muscles and causes a problem. You know, you could hurt yourself and not be able to play.
Well, you remember Jay Williams, the much touted point guard from about 12 or 14 years ago.
Yep.
For the Bulls. He had it in his contract that he could not ride motorcycles. And then he got in a motorcycle accident, and that helped him void his contract, and he never really did.
Ruined his NBA career.
Yeah, I mean, I know he came back, but he didn't really accomplish anything. He was just never quite the player that you would expect a number two pick to be.
Well, and he was the best point guard in the country at the time when he played for Duke. That was some good years. I mean, not that Duke's ever had down years. That was some good years, though, for Duke and for Jay Williams. In fact, I want to say that was that before Boozer and
Jay was before Boozer.
Okay. Because Boozer and then what's his name that played for Memphis so many years? Why am I forgetting a name? Devin, help me out.
Battier?
Yes. Boozer and Battier. So those two came after Jay Williams. Okay, that was I'm mixing my Duke years here. But no, I think there's something to be said about that. I agree with Mark Cuban. I almost think that as an NBA, as owners, you have to be able to put some stipulations on contracts. And I admit that that's going to make it harder to sign players, because I would imagine that some players are going to say, no way, I should be allowed to play with my country. I should be allowed to do this and I should be allowed to do that. But as an owner, you have to protect your investment. You have to. I think Dante will come back, but I think you have to look at Derrick Rose with a similar injury and look at the difference it made on his career and how much more timid he is now when he tries to go into the lane. I mean, this last year we watched him, I think, is the most aggressive I've seen him for a couple of years since his injury. And you have to wonder if the same thing's going to happen mentally to Dante Exum.
I have to do one quick correction. I looked it up, and Jay Williams and Carlos Boozer and Mike Dunleavy all came out the same year.
All right, there you go.
So that was quite a Duke team.
So Battier was on that team as well, or did he come out earlier?
I'm just looking at the 2002 draft. Seems like Battier came a year before. Battier is pretty old.
Well, I know Battier played alongside Boozer, but maybe it was it had to have been that, because that was the year Battier played the I don't know. I'd have to go back and look, but good call. Glad you caught that. So to address this a little more, I asked you guys, I mentioned earlier today, Zach Lowe, on the Low Post podcast. I suggest this listen for anybody. It was really quite entertaining. He jumped right into the podcast and said, and jumped right off by calling Utah Jazz fans crazy fans, probably the craziest in the NBA, because and he prefaced that with the fact that or his disclaimer to that was the fact that there's a perception by Jazz fans that because we're a small market, we're not noticed. So it's the little man syndrome. And so he's like, just for everybody that complains, here's our show. And we're starting it off with the Utah Jazz. And I would say a good third of the show was spent on the Utah Jazz and Dante Exum. And he had Amin how do you say his last name? That's for ESPN.
Amin El-Hassan.
Yeah, he had Amin El-Hassan on the show. And they talked about the implications of this injury of Dante's on the Utah Jazz. And I want to ask you, let me first of all mention that both of them looked at this as almost a non-factor for the Utah Jazz going forward based on the small sample size we had at the end of the season last year. This is bad news for the development of Dante Exum, but this really doesn't put the Jazz back in any sort of, it doesn't hurt them in moving forward right now. What do you think of that?
I think they still will be better this coming year than they were last year. It just really stinks to not have Exum be a part of that. Because I was counting on him getting a lot of minutes. And now you're going to have Trey Burke and Raul Neto. And Neto is a rookie that we weren't planning on playing that much. But now he's going to – now here's his opportunity. And you have these two guys who are a little undersized at the position and not great outside shooters. So, and we've talked about this before, but now the onus is on them to, you know, speed up their improvement since we don't have our starting point guard anymore. I've seen some people even like throw out trade ideas. I don't think the Jazz need to start making trades to upgrade point guard now, but point guard is the weakest position on the team, and now it's a little weaker because we won't have Exum.
Right.
But, you know, Rodney Hood can do a lot of what Exum was doing last year, in addition to Rodney being a good shooter. I think he's going to benefit from this more than anybody. And I know I've seen a couple people throw that out earlier, but I go along with that I do think Rodney's going to get a lot more responsibility next year.
I can agree with that. It was interesting too. You bring that in. Amin went on record today making a bold statement on the podcast. He said that he believes that by midseason, Raul Neto will be the starting point guard for the Utah Jazz. He honestly believes that he'll be the starter going forward. You know, they both, it's pretty sad, but both of them practically threw Trey under the bus. They were pretty harsh. With all due respect, I mean, it's not unfair to say some of the things that they did about Trey. You know, it was interesting to hear Zach just say, look, Trey's just a bad shooter, just can't shoot, just bad offensively. And it was interesting to hear him. But to go back to your Rodney Hood point, they both brought up, and this is where I started thinking about what point guard's going to service the Jazz better going forward. They both felt that maybe Trey isn't going to be the best option at point guard because he's a heavy usage guy compared to some of the other guys. He takes a lot more shots than the other guys, where you don't need that in a Jazz system because you need Gordon Hayward to be able to take those shots as some of the other guys. So maybe Raul Neto is going to be your guy that because he's not going to take a shot. They even compared him to Ricky Rubio, that he's going to be the guy who's going to shy away from the shot and simply look to pass.
Yeah. With Trey's bad shooting, it really hurt them. Overall, that he was the second highest usage percentage. It was Hayward and then Burke. He took the second most amount of shots last year. And so Exum's offensive numbers outside of his shooting, which is even worse than Trey's, but all of his other offensive numbers look okay because his usage rate was only 14%. 14% after the All-Star break. That's what I'm looking at right now. So, you know, my concern with Exum not being there anymore is Trey going to be more efficient with his usage? Is he going to be a better distributor? Are they going to work some schemes so that he's not always winding up with the ball in the last 4 seconds on the clock? If Neto replaces Trey midseason as the starter, that tells me two things. That tells me that Trey is not progressing in his third year like we hoped, and that Hal Neto is much better than we anticipated. And, you know, if Neto's that good, then awesome. Nice surprise. But I would be concerned if he's that much better than Burke, and Burke's improved, then Neto is just going to shock the world. But I think if Neto replaces him midseason, and I have a hard time seeing that, I think it's just because Trey is still shooting just as bad as he did in the first 2 years, and they're going to start looking to move him. I think it's more likely, though, that we'll see some improvement out of Trey. I think the fact that Cantor was gone and Gobert just makes everybody better, then I would like to see a full year of that effect with Trey. And you're going to have Alec back. So if you have Trey and Alec together with Gobert as the starting center, you still have a lot of great possibilities there.
Can't disagree with that. And I'm looking at it. I locked through some numbers out the last 24 hours as well, and he's taking some heat on it because I watched some people going back to him just saying, "Why are you saying some of the things that you're saying?" But his numbers he threw out when Trey and even Zach Lowe said this on the podcast today, when Trey and Rudy are on the floor, the offense is actually really good. Trey and Rudy together on the floor, and I don't remember the numbers. I can't quote them because I'd have to go back and read them. But even like I said, Zach Lowe went as far as to affirm or confirm, I should say, what Locke said, and that is that the offense is actually much better when Trey and Rudy are playing together on the court. Maybe that is your silver lining in the cloud going into this season, maybe. I'm trying to decide whether the look I'm getting from watching Devin is a look of I don't agree with you or of Alan, give me something else to be excited about.
Yeah, it is.
I've gotten to the point where I can read looks pretty well, and reading Devin's look, I knew that was coming. Devin's like, yawn, stretch. Give me something more, Alan. That's not a silver lining. Next. Swipe right, Tinder folks. Swipe right.
We're right back.
I'm looking up Trey and Rudy playing together. I'm just kind of waiting for this site to load. See if there's anything to that. I haven't seen those numbers. I saw Locke and I saw Andy respond with some numbers on, you know, trying to show it's not going to be that bad with X Mount versus Burke when they're there with Rudy. The pace is really slow with the two of them.
Well, I'm looking
90.5.
Okay, so I'm looking here. Locke posted earlier today, post All-Star break, the Jazz defensive rating, and I'm just looking defense for the start. He said X with Exum and Gobert on the floor, 94.6. With Burke and Gobert on the floor, 94.4. So not much of a difference in defensive rating for the Jazz. Offensive numbers? Let's see here. Oh, okay, here you go. Jazz most used lineup in the second half of the season. Exum, Hayward, Ingles, Favors, Gobert was +5 and 187. You put Burke in for Exum, and it's +14.9. Trying to see what else he said. Yeah, that's the numbers he was throwing out earlier. It's kind of interesting to me that plus right there that he threw out was huge to me. When Exum's on the floor with Hayward, Ingles, Favors, Gobert, it's a +0.5 in 187 minutes, but with Burke, it's a +14.9. I wonder what goes into play with those plus minutes or plus numbers when those guys are on the floor. It's interesting to me.
Well, I'm on NBA Wowie, and I'm looking at Trey and Rudy for the year, and Trey's, even with the 1,041 minutes they played together, Trey still shoots 37.4%.
But maybe the plus factor they're taking a lot more into play too, what he does for the offense on the floor aside from shooting. That's why I said I'm far from him a numbers geek. I'm just kind of wondering what factors and variables go into play on that plus minus.
I don't know. I'd have to look at that. Is there a better site than NBA Wowie for doing on and off court comparisons? Because the site feels like it's 2 years. That's a good, on updates.
That's a good question for our listeners. Anybody out there listening, if you can, if we haven't figured something out by tomorrow, when you're listening to this show, if you know of something better than NBA Wowie, please send us a link and let us know. We'd love to, John would love to go out and find it. I'd be interested in the results. So yeah, folks, if you know of something better, holler at us. But the other thing I'm looking at, without going further with stats, I think there's still a lot to be excited about with the season. Back to our thoughts on Exum being down. I can't say enough about how I feel bad for him, but I'm excited for Alec Burks to be back. Don't shake your head at me, Devin. I am very excited over having Alec Burks back on the floor.
If there's no Dante, there's no point. Guard.
Get it? Here we go with the now that one wasn't as good as your joke last week.
I'm sorry. Was bad. No. I apologize to our listeners.
What do you think they should do? Do you think they should go out and try to get Norris Cole or one of these point guard free agents that are still lingering out there?
No. No, I'm actually comfortable with the lineup the Jazz have right now. Because if you think about it, we've been talking about the lineup for the last few weeks. I actually think Exum being injured automatically tells you who the 14th guy on the roster is going to be. Bryce Cotton.
I think this cements it really. I think they have their 15 now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And I'm comfortable with Bryce Cotton. If he continues the way he played at the end of the summer or end of the season and into the summer, I'm comfortable with Bryce Cotton coming in and giving 10 minutes of just pure energy and excitement in a game. And because I bet, based on even the comments you made, I bet we're going to see Neto in a very limited fashion for the first month or two of the season. He'll probably come in, he'll play, 6 minutes here, 5 minutes here, 4 minutes here, and going on up, and maybe they'll raise his minutes, but I think for a while the Trey and Cotton experience is going to happen, and then after a while, when Neto has been kind of brought into the system and scheme, I think then we'll start to see maybe him get some more minutes. Would you disagree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I know he's a rookie, but he does have a lot of overseas experience already. He's, 23? I think they're going to want to play him as the second point guard right away, but Bryce is going to be there as their third. And Bryce might see, a few more minutes in the second half than the first half, depending on how the game's going.
Well, and that's where I'm wondering that, I recognize that Neto's got some experience, but I'm talking about the in-game, in Quinn's system of Jazz experience. And right now, Cotton's got 2 months, 3 months of experience running in that system, whereas Neto has nothing yet. And that's where I'm going with this. I do agree with you. I think Neto's going to be the second guy in the lineup down the road, but I think to start with, it might be a big dose of Cotton in the second unit until they've brought Neto into the scheme.
That's possible, but you know, I like Bryce Cotton, but he only played 15 games last year. It's not like he was this, you know, all important cog.
Right.
And Neto is more important to the future of your franchise than Cotton. In fact, as I look this up, Neto is actually a few months older than Cotton. That's interesting. So, you know, Cotton's great insurance because he's familiar with the system. But they have Neto on a 3-year deal, and he's the one they would like to bring along. Because, you know, if trade doesn't improve, then Trey's going to be in trade talks midseason, and they wanted Neto to be the second guard to Exum, most likely.
Right.
So either way, you know, whether Trey improves or not, Neto is more of a priority than Bryce. And, you know, I'll put it this way. If Jerry Sloan was coaching, I'd agree with you. I'd say, yeah, Bryce would probably be the backup. But I'm more inclined to think Quinn's going to want Neto to get experience right away.
Damn you and your disagreeing with me. Come on. When have you and I ever disagreed? Oh, wait, we always disagree. Why do you like this show better?
No, I said the show is better if we don't agree on everything.
Oh, yes, this is true. I was going to say, when do John and Alan ever agree? Well, very rarely. We've had plenty of great debates over the last 2 years. So there you have it, folks. You now get to see which one of us will be right heading into the season. Will Cotton be your number two, or will Neto be your number two? And you know what? This is a great opportunity to call on many of you to let both of us know what your thoughts are on the matter. Who will be the Jazz number two guard?
Trey Burke. You're both wrong.
Are you? You're in the mean camp of starting Neto right away.
Yep, I'm in that camp. I'm not saying he has to play starter minutes, but I think if you bring Burks into the lineup, the starting lineup, and you bring, of course, you're going to have Hayward and you're going to have Favors. You're going to have most of your offensive guys in that starting unit. I think it makes sense to play Trey with the second unit more. I think he's needed there, and I am not saying that as a diss on Trey. I'm saying that because I think he will have a better season offensively than he has had in his first 2 years. I don't think he's going to be a superstar by any means. I don't think he'll be fantastic, but he can't be any worse than he was last year.
Let me see if I get you right then. You think that out of necessity for the team and the offense, Trey will be the number two point guard?
Yes, but I do expect him to play the starter minutes. Expect to see Trey play 30 plus a night.
Get the ball in late in the fourth quarter,
right,
with Hayward.
Right.
Okay. All right. I think Devin just made sense of everything. We have it. There you go. Glory, hallelujah. Angels singing. Lights from heaven. We're done. Show's done. Case is made. We're finished.
Good night, everyone.
I have a question about Neto. His nickname is spelled Raulzinho. How do we pronounce that?
Raulzinho?
Raulzinho? Raulzinho?
Yes, keep in mind, Devin, the R is silent in his name, or howl.
It's howl. An H.
Yeah, like an H. Howl.
Either of you speak Portuguese? No? Okay. I did my mission in Seattle, so I don't have any other languages.
I'm trying to think of who we know on Twitter that knows Portuguese mission-wise, and
Doesn't Chappie know Portuguese?
Yes, I actually think Chappie is one. I think Chappie was a Brazil missionary, but I'm going along with you.
All right, I'm going to tweet him now and see.
Oh, live tweet the show. Chappie.
Can't hear you. We're recording.
I know.
You can Periscope it.
Ooh, Periscope.
I could.
John Periscope. We're asking John to reach out of his
comfort
zone. I
type it in and it says view translation. I click on it, says could not translate tweet. You suck, Bing. Why is Twitter partnering with Bing?
I don't know.
We'll see
because Twitter stock is down a great deal over the last over the third quarter of the year. So you know,
hashtag
Is that true?
Yeah, actually, that is true. Third quarter closings this last couple weeks ago, Twitter stock is down. They're at an all-time low since they joined New York Stock Exchange four years ago. Yeah, all-time low. So I think they said it dropped down to $36 a share, if I remember correctly, which is the lowest it's been. So there's your stock watch for the week, guys. Just letting you all know.
Yep, I'm looking back over the last year and a half. They're at an all-time low right now.
See? There you go. Stock watch. Hashtag Twitter stock watch.
Jedi and germs on the stocks. Talking Stockton and stocks.
We are your business brokers. Yeah, we're not going there.
I'm not that great with money.
No.
I used to be, but...
I'm not either.
Have a couple financial tragedies, and then it just... I've never, ever recovered, so... I try not to follow that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
Which is very detrimental, but...
I do read up on the news once in a while, and that's what I was reading 2 days ago, but simply because I was reading social media trends on Google, and that was one of the things that popped in. But, you know, whatever.
Well, if we have our 15 locked down, should we bother having a training camp? I mean, we threw some money at J.J. O'Brien. I don't see how he makes the team now. My client, Brock Modem, went to Lithuania, so they're not going to play him. And good for him for getting guaranteed money overseas rather than coming to Jazz training camp.
I don't know why I find it so entertaining, but every time you say my client Brock Modem and on Twitter it's in all caps, it just cracks me up, dude.
Do you know what that's from?
No, I was going to say there has to be a story behind this, so please enlighten me.
Oh, one of the biggest wrestlers in WWE right now is Brock Lesnar. And he has a manager who is always introducing him as my client, Brock Lesnar. So, you know, the only reason I wanted Brock Modem to make the team is so I could tweet out, my client, Brock Modem, every time he did something.
You say that with such enthusiasm. John's job in his next life is going to be a ring announcer at a wrestling match.
Sure, I'd do that.
I know you would. That's what I'm saying.
I'd love to do play-by-play on that.
For folks who don't know this, John is very well versed in a lot of things, from the Utah Jazz to movies. Yes, he knows his movies too. Politics to WWE. Yes, I just said WWE. John knows his WWE since he was a kid. I listened to a recent podcast he was on, and he talked about his youth days. So you need to go out to tornbysports.com, look up John English, and read some of his posts to keep up to date on WWE. Because you post that stuff, what, once a month, twice a month?
Yeah, I review all the pay-per-views, which aren't really pay-per-views anymore because you can just get them on the network. So
yeah. But
that's why I watch them now, because they're so cheap.
The man with 1,000 faces, Germs guy, the John English Germs guy.
Speaking of politics, the GOP debates tomorrow, so I'm going to be live tweeting that, and I'm going to get on a, podcast afterwards for Utah Politico Hub and give my reaction to it.
So if you're like me and not into politics, feel free to mute Germs guy tomorrow.
Kiss my grits.
Okay, Alice.
Flo.
What?
Flo said it, not Alice.
Well, I'm just going to Alice from Brady Bunch because she said it too.
Alice from Brady Bunch said it?
Yes. Kiss My Grits. That was something. Jack. What?
That was Flo from Alice. All right, I'm typing in Kiss My Grits, Alice. Not seeing Brady Bunch.
Oh, no. Here we go. Come on.
I win again.
For those keeping track, that's another point to John English. So
70s comedies were funny. Everyone had like a catchphrase that get a laugh and applause every time.
Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry,
I'm looking up Kiss My Grits too, but you know, I'll probably lose this. It does say it. No, don't you dare.
Where?
Kiss My Grits. The very first thing that comes up, a video says Alice Kiss My Grits. The complete first.
Alice is the name of the complete first season of Alice, which is the name of the show that Flo was on.
That's two for John. Yes.
Shall we move to Ant-Man?
If you're going to say anything negative about Ant-Man, then don't you dare.
Anything negative? Well, I could find something to complain about, but I actually really enjoyed Ant-Man. I had a lot of fun watching it. I wonder what the original vision was, because it was supposed to be Edgar Wright, who directed a lot of movies with Simon Pegg, like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, and so he was apparently going for some really specific, quirky movie, and I don't know what happened. Creative differences is what happened. So a lot of his screenplay stayed, but then Paul Rudd and Adam McKay rewrote it. And Adam McKay has worked on a lot of Will Ferrell movies, and him and Paul Rudd know each other because of the Anchorman movies. And so they kind of punched it up and they turned it over to Peyton Reed, who directed Bring It On. So the comedy in the movie was really effective, and it was, you know, it. And what I liked about it is it wasn't another blockbuster where they have to save the world. I mean, they kind of do have to save the world if Yellow Jacket's plan comes to fruition, but there's not some giant invading force destroying cities in the climax. It's more of a B movie side adventure in the universe, and those are nice to have too.
Yeah, I enjoyed the storyline of Scott trying to get back to his daughter. I really, really enjoyed what was going on between him and his daughter. And there was a lot of quotables there too about how somebody would say to him, be the hero that your daughter already believes you are. I mean, there were just so many good, feel good moments about that entire relationship.
Yeah, there was a lot of contemplation on that with Scott and his daughter, with Hank and his daughter, with mentor relationships with Hank and what was Cross's first name? Darren?
Yes.
Hank and Darren Cross. Yeah, they touched on all those themes.
Okay. Who was your favorite character of the movie?
You know, I will go with Michael Peña. I can't remember his character's name, but he was the Mexican, you know, sidekick for all the heist stuff.
I'm in the system. The system.
And T.I. was really good too. I was impressed with their chemistry when they pull up into the street and there are all those cop guards. He's like, "We're just gonna back up. We're just gonna back up. Mm-hmm. Just back it up." Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the horn on that van. Oh my gosh, he accidentally hits it, and wow. So no, and you're in agree. I'm in agreement with you. Peña stole the show, in my opinion. He completely stole the show in that movie, because everything he played off of comedic was just golden. I mean, from his stories that he told, every time Scout would say, "Hey, how about you give me the stripped down version?" And he still would just, he just go boom, 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 boom. And it's like, man, dude, you're killing me.
Yeah, that was a fun thing they did, is have everyone lip sync his lines as he's telling the story. Luis is the character's name, by the way.
Yes. So, yeah, and okay, so rank it on your Marvel movie, Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. Where does this one rank?
It's probably somewhere in the middle. I don't know if it's going to come down better than Ultron. Ultron took a few days to fade on me, and I just saw Ant-Man, so I'll see how I feel in a few days. I'll probably write my review tomorrow and just kind of contemplate it. I still like Guardians more, and Winter Soldier. There are a couple that I liked more, but I would say Ant-Man is somewhere in the middle or upper middle.
Okay. So you would...
Hey, Chappie came through.
Chappie did? What did you say?
Jalzinho.
Jalzinho, nice.
Jalzinho.
So, now I agree with you. Guardians was my favorite. Guardians was top of my list, but so I tried to understand what you just said. Would you agree then that Ant-Man was better than Ultron, or you're still putting Ultron ahead of Ant-Man this year?
Today I would put it above Ultron, but I have found with Marvel movies that it kind of takes a few days or weeks to have it kind of shift and to settle to where I actually have it. But as of right now, I'd say, yeah, I'd probably put it above Ultron.
Okay. And something else, if anybody's listening to this, you know, you don't have to listen to our spoilers, but another favorite part of that movie was the bathtub scene. Dude, when he shrinks in the bathtub, man. And that was probably one of the most visually thrilling scenes of the movie.
Yeah, that's where the real money of the movie is in all the shrinking and growing, and how they were really clever with that. They had a lot of fun with that, on how he can, you know, shrink up and down really quickly in fight scenes. And I liked all that stuff.
Like the fight scene with Falcon. Yeah, no. And the thing was for me is, like I said, I went into this movie skeptical. It wasn't marketed very well on many levels for me back in December when they first talked about it. And so going into this movie, I had low expectations. And the story started out great for me. I thought, okay, this is going somewhere. And then Michael Pena, you know, we get a first glimpse of him almost immediately. I mean, even the scene in the prison was actually very comical to me when they were saying goodbye in their funny little way where he has to get some stitches because of it. But it started out well for me, and I thought, okay, when he puts on this suit, that's going to be a deciding factor for me. And that was that bathtub scene. And he put on the suit and shrunk and ended up in the bathtub. And I was like, oh, man, okay, I can dig this. I can really dig it. And I watched it in 3D, which just gave it that much more just meaning to me. Watching it in 3D was just killer. And so, yeah, that's what finally sold me on it. So, on the side of other movies, I read your review.
I saw Pixels.
Yes, I read your review on that, and we don't need to rehash anything we talked about last week because you agreed with me on completely every level, and I'm okay with that.
I hadn't seen it yet when we recorded last week, but yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, no offense to certain people out there who disagreed with us on Twitter, but that's okay. We won't mention their names.
We don't have to be specific because they don't listen to this podcast anyway.
Ouch! And I have to. Never mind.
hey, my wife doesn't listen to it.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. So I also went home. Or well, last night we went and saw Mission Possible 5.
I've heard good things.
Yes. Highly recommend it. I've been binge watching the first four at home with my son. And so my son was just ready to go, and we saw it last night. And after binge watching him, there were some things I went back and watched of the first four, and I just went, you know, number one's always been my favorite, but when I went back and watched it, I was like, oh my gosh, 90s. Wow. Because it was 96, but it just blew my mind, some of it.
Oh, yeah. The internet.
Yes.
That was a blast.
And sending the mail the way they did. But then I went and watched.
Yeah, the internet has like 12 pages total.
Yeah, exactly. But then I went and watched number two and was reminded of just how much that one didn't hold after seeing it once. The first time I saw it, I was like, okay, cool action. But I go back and watch it now and two words, John Woo. I have nothing more to say than John Woo. I just didn't like it. But three.
Yeah, I saw it again at the gym a few years ago doing cardio cinema, and the whole time I'm just like, this is like my least favorite one.
Yes. But three might be my favorite one. And three was my favorite one until last night. I think I might put five at the top of my list now. But three with Philip Seymour Hoffman, and I mean, that one was just so, so good. And yeah, it was just well written. It was well done. And then, yeah, saw last night and I was like, okay, maybe I found my new favorite one. So I know you haven't seen it yet. Yes, you need to go see it. Anybody else hasn't seen Mission Impossible 5 yet? I strongly suggest going to see it. It's actually very well done. McQuarrie was the writer and director, and he did a fantastic job.
Did you ever see Jack Reacher?
Yes, I loved it.
Is it better than Jack Reacher?
It's hard to say it's better because they're on completely different levels. There was more comedy in this one than Jack Reacher 2. A lot more comedy.
I liked Jack Reacher. I didn't love Jack Reacher. I just thought it was a decent mid-level, kind of a throwback action movie. Like something that like something Bruce Willis would have starred in around 1990.
Well, yeah, okay.
And that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. I liked Reacher. I'm trying to think of why I liked it. There was just a lot to it that appealed to me. But watching Mission Impossible 5, I you know, just like we were talking about supporting actors stealing a movie, you know, Michael Pena, Simon Pegg stole this movie, dude. Simon Pegg was amazing. And I think maybe that's what they did right in the last couple that they've done, is Simon Pegg's had a more prominent role. And he had a more prominent role in this one, and he did very well. And he and Tom Cruise had quite the chemistry, and it was actually really good.
Well, cool.
So, Devin, any words you want to throw in? Words or thoughts for the day? I mean, we've talked movies, and I know just how boring that is for you. Come on, producer, give us your final words on something.
We are 1 year away from the Olympics in Brazil. That's kind of cool. There's a little fun fact for you. One year from this.
Cool. That is way cool. All right, there you go. Fun fact from Devin, from our producer, and very well done too.
Mm-hmm. I know, right? You put me on the spot, and I had that. There's a reason I check Facebook while we're recording.
Is that all you were doing? You look like you were taking a picture too. You were.
You'd have to follow me on social media to find out.
Oh, I think he got my bad side.
Which one?
Oh, all right. On that note, we've got anything else to add, John? Any additional thoughts?
I think we're good.
All right. Well, folks, thanks for listening to another edition of Jedi and Germs. Before we head out, been looking at some of our listeners, some of the stats on listeners recently. We want to give a shout out. I mean, this was a good episode to roll into. Give a shout out to our Australian listeners. Yes, we know you're there. You listen to us, and we're glad. We appreciate having you guys listen. We'll give love to Exum and to Ingalls anytime we possibly can, especially for those of you who listen, you know, from Australia, because, hey, we love Exum and we love Ingalls as well. We love having them on the team and watching them on Jazz basketball. Devin, you had the thought. Say it.
And we love you, too.
And we love you, too. Yes. John, any shout-out for our Aussie listeners?
Looking forward to Joe Ingalls in season 2 on the Jazz.
Yeah, and about now I would try and do some sort of a fake Aussie accent, and something tells me I'd totally ruin it, and we might lose listeners. So I'm not going to do
it. Don't offend the people.
No offending.
Just say thank you, let's call it a night.
Yes, we appreciate you listening. So thanks to all our listeners. Thanks for all the feedback you give us. We can't encourage you enough to please leave a review on iTunes and Stitcher. Reviews help us to be seen more, and for our podcast to be seen more on iTunes. So please leave us a 5-star review. Send us an email. You can contact us at JediZog@gmail.com. You can reach out to us on Twitter at Jedi and Germs, at Germs Guy, at Jedi Zog, and our producer at Torn by Devin. And we have asked that you give us some feedback on a couple of things we mentioned tonight. We could use some extra help in finding some additional sites. So, let us know. We appreciate you all listening. And please join us again next week for another edition of Jedi and Germs. John, take us out.
Oh, that's not a knife. That is a knife.
Crocodile Dundee.